Await no longer. Welcome to the road to greatness. I am your host, Joseph, and it is here on this special episode where me and my friend Luke Lore, the Insipid Ghost, break down Darksiders Genesis for the PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. So with all that said and with all that out of the way, the Insipid Ghost himself, Luke Lore, how are you doing, sir?
I'm here, good sir. I'm excited to be here, ready to talk some Darksiders. Thank you so much for having me, my friend.
Man, it's fun. Okay, so real talk right out of the way. This game was a load of fun to play with you.
This game is
a top-down, Diablo-esque inspired. It's like Diablo meets Marvel Ultimate Alliance bashed into each other type of experience. We got to play co-op. It's 1 to 2 players. Mm-hmm. In the Darksiders universe, play as Strife, play as War, the Horseman of the Apocalypse. And yeah, let's just jump right into the car. That's right, this is a locomotive because we are on the road to greatness. We kicked Kyle out, but don't worry. We'll get to him in another episode when we talk about dreams. Luke, with this episode, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to talk about the story beat, what the main synopsis of the story is, how we felt about it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a review discussion.
Sure.
We're going to talk about the abilities, the gameplay, the characters that we are going to be talking about, Strife and War, and how we felt about it overall. So with that, are you ready? Are you ready to go with me here?
I'm excited, man. Let's get on this road to greatness.
All right. First stop. Let's talk about it. I am not a newcomer. Sorry, I am a newcomer to Darksiders. This is my first ever Darksiders game. For you, sir, is this your first entry point? And where have you, if this isn't, what is your first game in the series?
So this is my third game in the Darksiders. No, it's all four. I've played all four of them, I suppose you could say. I initially kind of played Darksiders Genesis at Xbox's Fan Fest back at E3 in 2019. Liked a lot of it, had about 15 minutes hands-on, and I said, that's a game I think is real cool. But I'd never played Darksiders before. When Darksiders 3 hit Game Pass in December, I gave it a shot, because why not? It's always one of those AA budget titles, could be cool, some people love it, some not. Dove in, and I got hooked on the brand, hooked on the lore, hooked on the series. Went from 3 to 1, played a bit of 2, and now Genesis, and I'm having a blast with it, man.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, what is a bit of the synopsis of the story thus far? Because I hear it's a little bit weird. Like, when it comes to the storyline, Genesis is the prequel to anything, to everything. But if I'm just walking in, I'm assuming that this is kind of Diablo-esque in the sense of it's heaven versus hell. And somewhere in between, the Horseman of the Apocalypse is kind of caught in between this whole internal power struggle. Is that pretty much what I'm getting at there?
In a basic sense, absolutely. There's a lot of intricacies, very political, I suppose you would say, when it comes to it. There's a lot of layers to it. One of the nice things about Genesis, though, is for any newcomer, you have a closed story that has a lot of beats that people who are fans of the series would pick up on. But if you're not familiar with Darksiders, you can still play this start to finish and have a great time with it.
Yeah. And it seems like, so like in the beginning of the story, you're ordered, your boss, I guess, is the council. And the council is there to pretty much have the balance between heaven and hell. One side can't be greater than the other. And that's why the council is there. And they send you on a mission because there's some, like, there's some trickery going around in the politics of the underworld that you're kind of thrusted into. And even Strife and War, if I'm not mistaken, they don't even know why they're there. They kind of just know they got to kill some demons. Am I right in that assessment?
You are. The Charred Council keeps balance between, like, a cosmic balance, whether it's heaven, hell, the dead Nephilim, which is a species that the Horsemen wiped out there. All four Horsemen are Nephilim, and they wiped out their own species. And then humanity plays a third part in there as another kingdom that's meant to do something special between heaven and hell. And the Charred Council keeps balance between them all. It's a very long timeline in which Genesis is now the very beginning of the game's timeline. And the first Darksiders that came out over a decade ago is the end point thus far. Whereas two weird. And three take, yeah, it is a bit odd, but you know, Star Wars came out with episode four, so we can make it work.
We can make it work indeed. And for me, as a newcomer to the series, I took the story as, okay, so we got some demons to kill. Let's go kill me some demons. And that's really as far as I got with the story of like, okay, this is fun. This is fantasy. This is high fantasy. I don't need to take it too seriously.
Sure.
So let me just have some like over the top fun. For you as a fan, how did Genesis serve you story wise?
Served me very well. I loved the idea. I love the idea of heaven and hell warring. It's one of the allures to Diablo. And in the Darksiders verse, Genesis has a lot of beats that are really exciting because you're seeing Lucifer. You're battling with characters that will show up later on in the timelines and the lore. And that's exciting. And there's allusions to the other horsemen. Plus, this is the first time in any of the games that Strife is playable. And only the second or third time that you can truly see him. And so that is the big draw of Genesis, is that you are playing as the fourth horseman for the first time.
And how did you like Strife? Let's get to the characters right here, right now. Because the main bad guy is Moloch. But we don't really see him pretty much ever. Like, we see him for like two scenes. He really serves as the MacGuffin to what is the end cinematic for the most part. So let's get right into it. You like the story. I enjoyed it for what it was. It's kind of like popcorn food, or popcorn food. It's kind of like popcorn. You see, like an action flick. I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I get it.
But how did you like Strife?
I like Strife a lot, but I think in order to define Strife, you got to start with War, because he plays just like the War from the initial Darksiders game, which you can get on remasters. I think a lot of people have seen it for a couple bucks. Yeah. Which is a very original God of War meets Zelda type experience. And in order to recognize Strife for how lethe and agile he is in Genesis, you also play as War as like a comparison point, and he is a hack and slash melee get in gritty tank type character.
And yeah, for me, like I said it in the YouTube review, that for me, War plays like what I would think a Kratos, like old school Kratos, would play like in a top-down game, where he is all about getting in the thick of the fight and dealing as much AoE damage as possible.
Right.
Like, and if we could, then let's start with War. Let's start with his first ability that you get right off the bat. That's Blade Geyser. Right, Blade Geyser is an AoE where it's just all the swords are just stabbing like through the earth and dealing massive amount of damage to enemies. The second ability, Luke, could you give me the name of that one?
The name of the second ability is Rampage. Okay. Where you basically you get that ability active and you will plow through enemies, dealing damage as you go. And that's one of the abilities that you can completely miss in your playthrough. Yeah. It's an optional ability.
Yeah,
you can go back and find it. One of the nice things about Genesis is it rewards exploration. So this is an ability that if you want it, you got to seek it out.
Which, I'm going to be real with you. I mean, for like, there are like secondary abilities that we use for like puzzles and whatnot. Like we're going to talk about right here, right now. Ghost Hook, which is like pretty much a force grab, where you could force grab enemies or objects to help solve puzzles. You have the Vorpal Blade, which is like a, it's just like a throwing disc knife thing that could lock onto enemies, but also puzzles. And then you have the Tremor Gauntlet, which is pretty much just a superhero landing you could do constantly, which helps solve puzzles and then also deal AoE damage to other enemies.
I have to tell you, those were in the original Darksiders, which is all the more cool for longtime fans because they found a way to make it work in an isometric viewpoint.
Yeah. And do you think they nailed those things correctly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, I would argue this viewpoint serves War in a lot of ways because he's a blast to play with those abilities.
He is. I definitely love like the Ghost Hook, because when you're just grabbing a fool and then you're just doing your assassination, which is one of the coolest things that you could do in this game, it just feels so good. But the thing that I don't like about the abilities is, other than the ones that help you through puzzles, yeah, you can miss all of these abilities if you're not looking. And I think for me, as a gamer, that sucks, because I missed the second ability, Rampage. I got Stone Skin, and I thought Stone Skin was awesome. Mm-hmm. And pretty much for 10 seconds, most damage is just negated. You don't feel it. So mm-hmm. War really does feel like a big giant tank. Mm-hmm. And then his like super synergy ability is a meteor, where he mm-hmm. just smashes a fucking meteor into the ground, and then just everybody just kind of flies. Mm-hmm. And that's awesome. I got that ability. It's fun to use, but like seeing that you can miss those, to me... That's kind of sucked.
I'm of two minds about it, because in a game like this where you get those initial Diablo vibes, but it doesn't have a loot cycle, you wonder, all right, what's the point of me going around and finding things? And that seems to be how they believe they've solved that issue. On the other hand, you go through start to finish, you beat the game, you feel like, all right, I should have at least his abilities, maybe not the enhancements, because each of the weapons can have enhancements that will change according to which one you choose, and those give you kind of special perks. Yep. But yeah, to have some abilities be completely missable was an interesting choice. I don't know how I feel about it, if I'm being honest. It depends on if they do DLC to it. You got to find a way to keep people playing.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know,
I mean, that's the other thing. It's like the enhancements, I understand that if you're missing, because like they're not necessary. And mm-hmm. for me, like, I found the one I wanted. So like for my war, he was all about fire. So I chose the flame brand enchantment, which meant I was doing like a cyclone of fire as my AoE ability. And right. I thought that was dope. So I just never changed it after that. Like, there's a vampiric ability that mm-hmm. makes it so that I can heal myself for every strike that I make. Mm-hmm. But I was just like, no, that's not fire. That's not fun. But other than that, like...
My favorite was the thunderclap, where you have a static charge on your sword so that it will arc out and hit multiple enemies.
Yeah.
And I just got the... What's the last one called? Death Touch, where enemies will explode upon being killed and causing AoE to people around them.
Now, Luke, I don't like to brag, but there's another game that has literally something called Death Touch. You want to know what that game is?
I would love to know what it is.
World of Warcraft Death Knight. The coolest thing about this, and let me have this, gang, let me have this for a second.
All right, hold on. Can I talk to the audience real quick?
Yeah, sure.
Guys, if we let him, he's going to go on forever. But I will give him, in this one stake, it does kind of look like Warcraft. It does have some elements and themes. All right, Joe, come on back. Let's hear what you got. Okay.
So, Death Touch is something that's totally badass. You can literally have, if you kill someone in, like, let's just say PvP or PvE, you get someone near that dead body, you cause that dead body to explode.
That's cool.
It's super dope. I told you it would be worth it. That's a good payoff. Death Touch
is
dope.
And that's truly, that is a staple of the Darksiders franchise from start to finish. All three of the first games are in different genres while being a Darksiders game, and they pull from other areas. The first game, third-person action, but pulled from Zelda's dungeons, pulled from God of War's combat. The second one took open-world loot-based concepts into it, and the third one took elements of Dark Souls and From Software games, this one taking from Diablo. It's strange to be a Darksiders fan, Joe, because it's still the Darksiders game, but each one is a different genre for each of the eras.
And from what I understand, even through like the Darksiders community, is that you kind of have to be a fan of all these genres to really be a fan of Darksiders. And I gotta respect them for doing it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So like, for example, War, you tell me all the time when we were playing, dude, you're going to love Darksiders 1. And I turned on Darksiders 1. I was just like, oh my God, he does play exactly mm-hmm. how he would in Darksiders.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Now, how did you like him as a character, you knowing where his story ends up in at the end of the first game? Do you think that this is serviceable for him? Do you think this exceeds your expectations to what you wanted from War?
Absolutely. I thought it did a very good job at fleshing out War as a character, because he is the primary character. His actions in Darksiders 1 are the reason for Darksiders 2 and 3. That's why that exists, and this gives background and context to a bit of those. And I will spoil the end of Darksiders 1 because it is necessary.
Okay.
All four horsemen are crashing down to Earth to arrive together for the first time in a long time. And okay. So that's the allure, is that they're all being brought back together, and then cliffhanger. None of these games give us that moment. So to fill out the backstory, at least, is fascinating, and it does serve Wars context for the evolution we see of his character.
Yeah, I like him. He's kind of like Kratos, but with a duty. Like, he's stoic. Mm-hmm. He doesn't give a shit. He is mercifulless. Mm-hmm. Like, all of his actions, he is all about just getting the job done. He is all about warfare, mm-hmm. but with a duty to hold. He is all about honor. He's all about, yeah, kind of like he lives his life through battle.
And now his brother mocks him the whole time in the most brother-esque fashion, which really tells us a lot about Strife as a character, mm-hmm. which is neat, because Strife is funny. Yeah. He makes fun of him.
Yeah, Strife is cracking jokes every time he can. Like, one person's like, I'm going to bathe with your blood. And Strife's like, good, because you smell like shit. And I'm like, that is awesome. So let's get from War, let's cross over to Strife. Strife as a character. How does he play to you?
He plays fantastically. He's much more of a medium to long range character in terms mm-hmm. of the map, with his dual pistols, each of which can have their own enhancements and be tailored to certain things. I played him a lot more like a twin stick shooter than a melee based character, which I thought was great.
Yeah,
I enjoyed moving about the map that way, and having pistols that will deal arc damage and then will arc out and hit multiple enemies versus steal life, which you can do. I like Strife a lot. He plays Leith. He's fast. He is, in many ways, the antithesis of War, and yet very playable and approachable. You and I could bounce back and forth and still comfortably play.
Yeah. For me, on my solo journey, and this is why I'm going to need your help here, mm-hmm. I almost never touch Strife unless my War died in battle.
Mm-hmm.
Not because I didn't like how Strife played, but just because when I'm playing a Diablo game, I am a barbarian, mm-hmm. right? Like, I am, let's go in there. I'm the tank. Let me take the brunt of it. That's how I want to play. Mm-hmm. So my first thing is congrats to this game for letting you play the way you want,
mm-hmm.
or to just switch on and off if you're playing solo mm-hmm. to who you want to play as. And I loved how nimble Strife is.
Mm-hmm.
Just Strife is not, he is the total antithesis of just like, I'm about staying out of battle. Like, mm-hmm. the only extra move that I have, like, he has a shadow clone mm-hmm. where if there's an enemy on him, he will, you know, you press square or X on Xbox or whatever mystery button on Nintendo, and you Strife over, or you roll over, and then you have a clone where you were previously standing, mm-hmm. and the demon will attack your clone, and your clone does damage to that demon. So he pretty much helps you aggro the enemies away from you, mm-hmm. while you can then get the range you need to do that DPS.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other ability that I had was, and I can't pronounce this one for the life of me, Caltrops. It's just Caltrops. Mines. He's throwing mines on the ground. And so you're kiting enemies into these mines and just watching them explode. But I don't have the second ability or like his synergy ability. Could you tell me what those are?
Well, the Caltrops was the ability that I was missing, actually. Ooh. Where dropping the mines, I didn't get that until I went back after the fact and snagged that one. But the World Ender, which is this super mega cannon that he gets, he basically puts two pistols together and has a go. You equated it to a Mega Man in many ways.
Yeah.
That is a super cool ability that he picks up, which I think is a blast. And then the synergy one is when he drops in, he sticks his pistol out to each side and spins around the room.
Like a Reaper from Overwatch.
Yes, yeah, and in many ways looks like Reaper, looks a bit like Cade 6. He has that look about him in some ways. And there you go again with, they do a good job at peeling from other IP franchises. Yeah, but it's not egregious, or at least it doesn't feel egregious to me.
It's like, you know where they took it from, but it's in a respectful way, and it's different enough where you're not minding that. It's
right.
Like that.
It doesn't necessarily feel like Paladins to Overwatch, where it's definitely a clone. No, it's its own thing, which I appreciate.
It's definitely its own thing,
We should also note that you and I each played solo and separate, Joe.
Yeah.
But when we played together, solo and separate. When we played together and we merged together, the puzzles of the world would change to adapt for two players or stick solo for one. And I thought that was a really neat, subtle way to acknowledge that you can indeed play the way you want to play, as you said.
Yeah. And that, again, that was the one thing that I was amazed with, because doing a puzzle with you and then like, or doing a puzzle solo, because you got a job and shit, and then doing it with you, it was just like, oh, this is actually, this is different enough where it makes me still have to think.
Mm-hmm.
And I really dug that. And his gear slash equipment, you have the same ghost hook that War has, which I don't know why you would want that as Strife. You have a void bomb, which is pretty much you throw these little void bombs on these little like purple sigils, and it helps you teleport and, you know, solve puzzles and
it's
shit.
It's essentially a portal gun.
Yeah, essentially, yeah, portal gun is actually perfect. And then the ether spark, which was the only puzzles I hated in this game so much. There's these little paths you have to take. You summon this little ball and get the ball from point A to point B, and I hated it. I just hated it, and I wish it wasn't in the game. I hate them.
It did not bother me until I was trying to do, perhaps not called end game things, but things that I didn't need to do to advance. Mm-hmm. The stuff that I had to do to advance a level never really bothered me. It was the extra stuff that I would get frustrated with. A neat ability, though. I did not see that coming. I would not have envisioned that thing. Mm-hmm. The puzzles were threw me off a couple times, though.
And so for me, the reason why I always equate it to Mega Man is the different guns or ammo types you're able to get. Like, you have your standard shot, which is just your ammo that will never expire. Then you have your charge shot, which is the big giant cannon. Then I have static shock, gravity shot, where static is, it's going to zap anybody near the person you're shooting. Gravity shot, which I actually hated. I did not like this gun. Mm-hmm. You just fire big giant gravity balls, and it gravitates the enemies to that giant gravity well. Dumb. Lava shot, which was the one I use like all the time.
Really?
Yeah, I love a good chain gun in a video game. And Lava Shot is just a ramp up until it is just...
So you just fire it. It's a flamethrower eventually.
Yeah, eventually. Mm-hmm. That's the one where it feels total twin stick shooter and I'm in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there are other two ammo types if you like to describe those as well.
So the nature shot, when you fire that, it'll rip health off of the enemies and drop the green orbs down onto the ground. It fires like a shotgun, though. Okay. So its rate of fire and the amount of ammo you use, you're trading ammo for health, which can be very helpful with some of the more difficult enemies. And then the other one that you were missing in that is the beam shot, which feels like a phaser or a laser.
That one was dope.
They're cool. I loved the gravity portion.
Oh, really?
In terms of crowd control, playing solo, when you play in the arena, which is an optional wave-based area that you can access, playing in the arena for crowd control, the gravity shot helped a bit in a lot of ways. But in the game proper, I didn't use it much.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing is if you're just shooting one ammo type consistently and hitting your target with it, it'll then do, like, this ultra mode. Mm-hmm. So, like, for what you were alluding to, like, the lava shot, after a while, after it's ramped up enough, turns into a flamethrower, which I thought was dope. The charge shot just becomes a 6-round heavy revolver, and you're just laying waste. That's what I would shoot at the bosses all the time, to just mutilate that health. It just, oh, God, so great. And then the one you just talked about, the laser and the phaser ability, it just turned your gun into a giant death ray.
Mm-hmm.
It would just cover the whole entire field. It was awesome. The one thing that I didn't understand playing as Strife is how do you get ammo back as Strife? As someone, again, I really only had to play, like, only played him when I had to.
Okay, so you probably saw this and didn't need to acknowledge it, and because there's so many colors, because we should mention the game is beautiful.
Beautiful.
A lot of colors, and a lot of information does fly at you throughout the game. The purple boxes that were being dropped off all the enemies, those are ammo boxes, and they will refill you. It's right there. Yep, it's right there.
Oh, my God, I'm dumb.
Well, you knew it the whole time, but you had no need to, because you chose to play as War, and why not? Because War is a blast to play.
Dude, he's so dumb.
I found initially, I was like, I'm never going to run out of ammo. This is never going to be an issue. Yeah. And towards the latter part and some of the more challenging optional quests and whatnot, yeah, I was rotating through ammo types pretty regularly. And with some of the more extreme bosses, I would switch to just permanently have the type that never runs out, the standard shot,
yeah.
So that I didn't cycle away from something and I wasn't firing something I wasn't ready for.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them, like the gravity shot, I was like, okay, I'm just going to waste you. Mm-hmm. See what comes of it.
Sure.
Yeah, overall, though, I love the feel of both of these characters and how different the levels played out depending on the character. Like, for Strife, for example, mm-hmm. he always felt like I always had to be on my toes. But every situation, I had enough space to evade an enemy. Mm-hmm. I never felt like I was backed into a corner whatsoever. And with War, I felt like I was the epitome of War. Like, mm-hmm. he just felt so freaking good to play. The one thing that we didn't mention, two things that we didn't mention when it comes to the combat of this game, the assassinations.
Oh,
there are assassinations
gracious.
In this goddamn game.
So that is a staple of the Darksiders franchise, is once you get an enemy low, you can hit the B button or circle button, I would imagine. But you will hit that, and then you get a really cool death animation.
Yeah.
And what I wondered when I initially picked up the sticks in this one, if that would still show now that they're having this new isometric viewpoint. And man, they did not disappoint.
No way. The camera will actually, depending on the enemy, like if it's a mini boss, mm-hmm. it'll actually hone in on your character, what they're doing. So like there's one mini boss where, as War, like this enemy has a giant club. I took the club and then I just like whacked him over the head with it, mm-hmm. type of deal. And it felt visceral. It felt like it had some oomph. Like I was really doing some damage. The one thing that like I think the assassinations that Strife does are awesome. Like,
oh yeah, he'll climb an enemy, leap across their limbs while he's shooting them, and then do flip backflips, forward yeah. flips, and charge up and put the gun in the mouth and blow their head off.
Yeah,
and they're creative.
Yeah, depending on like the size of the enemy,
mm-hmm.
it gets more visceral. So like the basic enemy, like I'll just like Spartan kick him if I'm War.
Well, okay, so that's the one I want to say.
Stab the chest, yeah.
As bloody and massive as these assassinations get, and they're super cool. Some of my favorites were more comedic. If you'd be near a ledge and you had a little enemy, you just like kick him off, just a little punt right off the ledge, and that was your assassination. Whereas you do the same thing in a slightly different part of the map, mm-hmm. and you are ripping this beast apart.
Yeah, and the cool thing, and this is how I in the YouTube review equated it to Diablo, whereas you do that assassination, you're rewarded with health and energy that charges up your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the one thing that I really like from this game, because there were certain points where I would, in a boss fight, I would leave some of the enemies close to death. Mm-hmm. And then when I was getting low on health, I would just chain assassinate all these fools and then get my abilities back and then go back to the boss.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was something super unique, super special. The one passive ability is our different forms we get to take. The chaos anarchy forms.
Mm-hmm.
When I first did this, I lost my mind. You transform into like this huge ass demon yourself. Mm-hmm. Like whatever I think it's a Barlog, whatever they're called in Lord of the Rings, you effectively turn into one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dope. You turn into this massive hulking beast that can't be stopped.
Yep, each of the horsemen have their own arcane or wrath type form that is just this massive creature beast. And it's neat because in Genesis you see Strife and War getting their versions unlocked. Yeah. And so it makes more sense later on why you have it in Darksiders proper. But mm-hmm. I dig it because these things look massive and it shows the type of creatures they have within them. And the multiple forms they take as horsemen of the apocalypse. I mean, you are War incarnate when you are that beast with his sword. Yeah. And you are Strife's absolute death-wielding
You have, dragon. Like, a chain gun. Like, again, this is where Strife's a little cooler. He has, like, a fucking, like, minigun mm-hmm. that is, like, his basic attack when he's this hulking beast. Then he has, like, I think it's, like, a tail whip. As his melee,
mm-hmm.
and then a death ray cannon with his tail, he'll shoot at the boss, which will drain his chaos meter, returning him back to normal. But you're totally invincible, mm-hmm. and your DPS is through the roof. It's over 9,000. Like, oh, yeah. It feels so fantastic playing as these things.
And one of the neatest things about the assassinations we mentioned, these primal forms that they tend to get, is that whether you're playing in co-op or not, you still see all the action, and it will light your screen up brilliantly. It's almost a Marvel vs. Capcom-esque in that it will just fill your screen with colors and explosions, yeah. and you just feel powerful.
I never felt it was overwhelming. And I'm playing on a Pro and on a X. Mm-hmm. Never saw a frame rate drop. So I can't say the same for Switch, mm-hmm. but on the X, on the Pro, frame rate was stable. It was nice. No hiccups whatsoever. I even told you, but I think they patched something that the Pro actually felt a little better in the beginning.
You told me that, and it's I only played on an Xbox One X, and I saw a weird framing thing in the opening video of all things, like the opening FMV yeah. video, and then after that, I had zero issues with frame rate throughout the entirety of the game, and I'm sure we'll get to some of the jank that comes with the Darksiders game and Genesis in particular.
I mean, let's talk about it right now.
Well, hold on, we didn't. Yeah. Do you know about the frame rate on Stadia? Did that do well? I just had to get it in there.
You know what?
Zing!
Suck it, one Stadia listener. No, I'm kidding. I bet you got you three are so happy.
Yep.
God damn it. Sorry, Stady.
Two or three people are very upset with us right now.
Yeah, they're going to send me an angry letter.
Click like on YouTube. Like, share, subscribe.
Please. So, yeah, let's talk about the jank, which is, to me, it's all about that map. So, the map itself...
Oh, no, hold on. When you say the map, do you mean the map you call up to figure out where to go, or do you mean the level design?
Level design.
Okay, gotcha.
It's got some jank to it. It's got some charm. Like you say, there's these huge vistas where you're traversing mm-hmm. with your horses, and it's great. Mm-hmm. It's nice. You get to explore. There's platforming elements. We'll get mm-hmm. to it. Puzzle solving elements that break up the monotony of the gameplay.
Sure.
But oftentimes, I was finding myself fighting with the camera
mm-hmm.
when it came to the platforming, and then even falling through the graphics. Or in certain vaults, which are trickster vaults, mm-hmm. that are kind of like secret areas where you get more health or different abilities in, you can actually see where the level design artist kind of stopped.
Right.
Like you can actually see where the level ends. And it's that lack of polish that kind of shows there. How did you feel about the environmental design environmental design. Let's go with it.
Well, right off the bat, it's apparent that the game is gorgeous, and they did a really good job capturing this heaven-hell aesthetic. The art style, it feels very Todd McFarlane, Kingdoms of Amalur. You've really captured that aesthetic. And then when you start going through, you realize, or your initial instinct, because of games like Diablo, you want to turn that camera, and you can't. And it is very frustrating. It took probably 2 hours to get used to, and then it just... kind of became something I was aware of and just kind of moved through, because you do fall through levels. It's very frustrating with some of the level designs, because you're not sure where you're supposed to go to accomplish certain things, and you won't be sure of certain angles. I can't tell you the number of times you and I together and separately would go try to hit a switch, try to land on a ledge, and miss because of an angle issue, or you're not sure about the telemetry and geometry of your character and the level overall.
And where it does it, like, you open up the map. What's with games and maps recently? It's like, it'll highlight the area you're in, but not pinpoint where you are in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so annoying to me. Because I'm like, where am I supposed to go? Am I supposed to go up, down, left, right? Like,
you eventually start using landmarks, and that's frustrating. And between Control, Jedi Fallen Order, Darksiders Genesis,
exactly,
I don't know what to do. And as a Darksiders fan, even Darksiders 3 didn't give you a map. They gave you a compass. And it, again, I think the intention is to reward exploration, but I found that to be a bit more frustration than exploration. Mm-hmm. And that's an easy fix. Games should be accessible in all ways, and this one wasn't.
Yeah. And that kind of sucked. Like, there was one where I was in a trickster vault. I think this is, like, chapter 7, I'd like to say 6 or 7, where you're fighting a certain type of undead. And you're in this vault, and it says that there's like a health stone to upgrade my health. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think I'm standing right where it is.
Mm-hmm.
And where is it? Is there a second level? I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, I'm just like jumping off the ledges, trying to kill myself. And then there are certain times because of the jank where I fall off a ledge. It doesn't kill me. I'm like, well, where do I go from here? Because now I'm just stuck, and now I got to restart this game.
Yeah, and I've been able to get out of most of the frustrating points by switching characters, hitting jump a lot, trying to land on certain things. But thankfully, I say thankfully, like it shouldn't be this way, but there's if you abandon your mission, it will still save every collectible or soul that you've collected thus far. So you don't lose progress in that sense. But it shouldn't exist that way. You shouldn't get stuck.
No.
It feels like for a game that came out on Stadia and PC late November, early December, somewhere in there, it feels like they could have gone back and fixed this stuff up. But I would imagine their attention is elsewhere because it doesn't feel like that happened.
Yeah, it definitely feels like, hey, we completed this game. We did what we got to.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now we're done. Now we're on to the next game. We're on to the next project. Which, hey, listen, Airship Syndicate. You guys did a bang up job here for the
absolutely.
Most part.
Yeah, I want more. I will tell you when we get to that. After we're done with this section, I want a Genesis 2.
Sure.
I don't want Darksiders 4 to be Genesis. I want Genesis 2. But the jank is endearing, and it's indicative of, I think, Darksiders overall, which is AA at its peak, not quite AAA. You and I talked about like if we had to give scores, where would we land? Good, great. And I feel like it's the very best of good.
It's old school Bethesda jank, where like you'll see like a villager stuck in a tree and you're like, that's, you know, in Skyrim, and you'll be like, oh, that's cute, because you're having so much fun in Skyrim,
right?
Because you get to fight a dragon out of the blue, right?
Sure.
Like it's that type of jank that you're going to see in this game. Some things that don't make sense, like I was looking at the Reddit, and sometimes the dialogue doesn't work that great, so how
you hear one's voice, but it'll say another. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah.
There's one where it's Strife in War, and how their dialogue happens is little pop-ups at like just like a Diablo game on the corner of the screen. And Strife was War, and War was War. So it's two wars talking like two. It's that type of jank where you're just like, dude, I'm just having so much fun. I'm letting this slide.
Sure.
But there is jank here.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not. For the most part, it's also sometimes a jank that helps you out, so you don't mind. Like, there are some puzzles that I was able to manipulate the environment by just jumping randomly and getting over a puzzle that I wasn't supposed to get over, and then getting an ability that I shouldn't have gotten at that time.
Sure.
And able to go through the game a little bit easier, so I'm like, okay, I'll forgive it there.
Sure.
But other
we should
that,
mention also $40 title at launch.
$40 title. That is a thing that we gotta give credit there. This isn't a full $60. Give me all your money. This is give me most of it.
And for $40, I'm north of 30 hours at this point.
Yeah.
You can mainline the game in 15, give or take a bit. But I'm north of 30, and a lot of that's been spent playing with you, playing with a couple of other buddies, just going through playing arena because the combat's so fun. We don't even care what our score is. We just go through arena fighting waves because the combat is so much
and
fun.
And that's the end game. We didn't even get into the creature cores, but like pretty much there's this whole customization of your trees where you'll have, you know, abilities that'll give you more health. There are abilities that give you more attack power, more of your chaos meter. And that's all by killing different creatures in the environment and gaining their cores. And they give you little passive abilities as well, whether that's like lifesteal or a bleed effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's entering places in the arena where it's practically just a horde mode of just like, hey, let's cut the bullshit. We're just giving you combat. That feels so much fun. So much fun.
And it's cool to mess around with that tree as well, because it'll give you an overall power stat at the bit. Like, it'll take your health, your wrath, and your attack and add them all together, and you get a power stat. And it's neat to see which cores can be dropped into which slots and the different effects they'll give you. It's an impressive layer of depth that when I first started off, because you're bombarded, the menus are obnoxiously complex in the very beginning.
Yeah.
It you miss some of that, or if you're like me, maybe your eyes glaze over a bit. And as I started to ease into the game and understand things more, I realized there's a layer of depth that I didn't quite give it credit for initially because of those creature cores.
Yeah. And I think it's also because we were streaming as well.
Well, it's true. We did stream the first 2 hours off the bat and then go back and play off stream a bit too.
So with that, we talked about the story, serviceable. It is if you're a fan of the series, you're going to like it. If you're a newcomer like me, you're going to enjoy it for what it is. I enjoyed it so much so that I'm starting Darksiders 1. Mm-hmm. Don't know where I'll end up with that game, but I'm giving it a go. I love the art style. I know back in the day, THQ said that this game was very much inspired by Legend of Zelda, by God of War, and the art style was inspired from Blizzard, from Warcraft. So with all that intertwined, I'm definitely in to continue my journey with Dark Souls as a franchise.
Darksiders.
Or sorry, did I say Dark Souls? It's like D and an S.
But what'll be so interesting about that, though, is that game was made a decade ago.
Yeah.
You know, and that will be, Darksiders 1 came out in 2010. Yeah. So you'll be seeing level design for that. Even the remasters were in the early set of this generation, they were just upscaled. So you'll be playing a game that will inherently feel old, and yet you'll be seeing elements of Genesis in it. And Darksiders 3, you'll see a bit more modernized, although the scope has been scaled back to be similar to more From Software games in a From Software light as approach. So it's a neat way to traverse different genres in an umbrella of a franchise.
Yeah. So how we do ranking here is we first answer this question. Should you go out there and buy Darksiders Genesis?
You're asking me? I would say yes. I think this is a day one buy because it's got a $40 price point. Yep, $40 price point. You need to go ahead and snag this one, whether you're playing solo or with a friend. We've played it on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Had a blast with it on that. I hear good things about the Switch port as well. This is a buy on day one for me.
Same. I think this is for $40 and, like, look, if it's in the middle of April, where you got Resident Evil, you got Doom, you got Final Fantasy VII, I would say, maybe wait. But because it is where it's landing in a perfect time where there's not a lot to play, go out there. Buy this. $40. It's going to be a really fun 15, 20 hours. Or if you really love it like us, maybe even try to platinum it.
And I can see the Switch crowd really getting into this. This is the type of game I wish I had on my Vita way back when.
Yeah.
So I can see Switch crowd really enjoying this. Just pick up, play, pause, put it in standby.
Exactly. And that's kind of like, I was talking to Rybo. He was just like, Joe, I saw your review. I'm getting it. And so thank you, Rybo. Help me out there. And he's loving it too on his Switch. So
good to hear.
This was, even while I was playing, I was just like, maybe I'll toss $40. Now, I should have said, these codes provided by THQ Nordic. So take all what we're about to say with a grain of salt.
Yeah, we did get review codes for each system. I do have the collector's edition. I pre-ordered that ahead of time due to shipping concerns. That's not arrived yet. But I did fork down prior to the game coming out. And so take that into account as well, that I did not cancel that pre-order. So that extra code is coming in whenever it comes in.
I'm very excited for you. So because this is a PlayStation-centric show, I mean, it's a road to greatness.
Absolutely.
We then have a ranking system of platinum, gold, silver, bronze. What would you give this game on the shelf that is the road to greatness? Car theme, but there's shelves. There's shelves in this car.
Okay.
What trophy would you give this?
Gold. This is a gold trophy right here.
Yeah.
This is just shy of a platinum. For some of that jank that we talked about, some of the polish that could have happened but didn't, camera workings. But there is just so much joy to be had in exploring. The dungeon designs are fascinating. The art is beautiful. This, for me, gold trophy all around. I thought Airship Syndicate did a wonderful job. I hope to see them continue in the Darksiders universe. I want a Genesis 2 where you play as Fury and Death. Or something akin to that. Dark
because they said it in like the first like three sentences. Where's Fury and Death? And they're like, They're not doing other. They're doing horse people shit. I don't know. Yeah, I would love to see a Genesis too.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I want this Genesis to exist, this style of the Darksiders game to exist separate from the main game. I'm curious what Darksiders 4 is, but this has earned a place in the pantheon of Darksiders games that is worthy for newcomers and fans alike, whatever that means to you.
Yeah, I definitely think it's up there as well. I would give this game a gold, for sure. It's like, though the lower tier of gold. Like, it could be a silver. It could easily be a silver because of some of the jank. But at that $40 price tag and how much fun I'm having with it, I definitely think it's gold, for sure. And so that has been our discussion of Darksiders Genesis for the Road to Greatness. Next game that we will be talking about, Kyle will be coming back. We will be talking about Dreams, Media Molecules Dreams. That one's going to be really different because it's a game that is very, very different. So I hope you all are going to tune in for that one because I'm very much looking forward to it. Maybe probably after PAX, me and Kyle will talk to you guys and gals about our thoughts of Media Molecules Dreams. So with all that said, with all that out of the way, Luke, where can people find you?
Oh, I hope you enjoyed having me on. And if you did, you can find me over on a podcast I host called the Xbox Expansion Pass on all podcast services. Just search Xbox Expansion Pass. And you can find me on the Twitters at Insipid Ghost.
Ooh, the Insipid Ghost, you say. Okay, I believe you. And you can find me, Mr. Badbait, of course, the Trophy Room, PS Trophy Room, on Twitter. Thank you each and every one of you for supporting us on patreon.com/badbit. So with all that said, with all that out of the way, keep hunting and keep playing PlayStation.